I'm Tara, and welcome to Sagas and Sass Season 4, brought to you by Geek Saga Entertainment. This is Episode 77, covering Sons of Ares, Volume 2.
I'm fellow Sagas and Sass host Nick, here to let you know that while this episode will not contain spoilers for Sons of Ares 3 or Lightbringer, there is a chance that plot points from the first five Red Rising novels will make their way into our discussion. Oh, and FYI, the opinions are those of us as individuals and don't necessarily reflect the opinions of the show as a whole. But let's be real. Usually we're all on the same page or very close to it.
Last but not least, don't forget to check out our Patreon. With 10 tiers ranging from $1 a month to $40 a month, it offers tons of ways to support us and receive some great perks in return. You can find us at patreon.com/geeksaga_entertainment. Now, let's dive right into our summary.
Despite Volume 2 of the Sons of Ares graphic novels being titled Wrath, Pierce Brown introduces it as more of a journey from mindless revenge to the first flickers of hope. When it begins, the child in the cot turns out not to be about Severo and Fitchner's time with him, but about his continued fight against his former friend Arturius. Quicksilver announces that he can no longer employ Fitchner and presses him to spend time with his son. Instead, Fitchner hires a live-in nanny and meets up with the syndicate to make a really stupid, to be quite honest, deal that will get him access to Arturius's home, which he and his crew, including Bryn's sister Rihanna, break into because apparently Fitchner aims to kill Arturius's son? Not cool, man. Thankfully, the next chapter, the DNA step-up, immediately reveals that Rihanna stopped him by firing her own gun into the air. Of course, this raises the alarm, Fitchner's crew flee, and the Grey who is with them is killed before rescue arrives, thanks to Quicksilver. This leads to Fitchner petitioning Quicksilver for his patronage, but soon after finding out that his new patron has been funneling money to carvers, and one in particular, Zarobal, the carver who helped Fitchner and Bryn conceive Severo. Fitchner pays Zarobal a visit to get more information as to why, but what he discovers, that Quicksilver is researching mixed-color offspring and genetic adaptations that allow for very, very long space flights, just leaves him with more questions. And that's not his only problem, because Chapter 3, The Cloud-Capped Towers, kicks off with Fitchner receiving the news that Rihanna has absconded with Severo. Not that he can do anything about that just yet, as Quicksilver already has a job for him: to head off to Ganymede and a face-to-face meeting with a Gold who is resisting Quick's overtures to gain a controlling stake in his shipbuilding company. The Gold, Hecuba, sends him off on a so-called fact-finding mission with her daughter Prospera, and the intel that he could profit should her pixie daughter have an accident during their trip. He appears to orchestrate just that, returning Prospera to Hecuba in a floating casket of sorts. Only when Hecuba opens it and leans over her daughter, Prospera attacks! Problem is, just as she shoots Hecuba, her mother wraps her razor around Prospera's neck, and Fitchner leaves them both bleeding out on the floor.
Back on Mars for Chapter 4, spirals are turning, turning, turning. Severo's nanny is dealing with people banging down Fitchner's door looking for him, but she doesn't know where he is, and Rihanna and Silax can't reach him either. So what's he up to? Well, first he's being questioned about the deaths of Hecuba and Prospera because he was the last person to see either of them alive. Thankfully, he's able to use his anger to trick the Securitas Magister into believing that he had nothing to do with all of that, and then he's off to the secret shipyard courtesy of Hecuba's information, a shipyard that appears to be building interstellar ships. Problem is, while Fitchner does get permission to land at the shipyard, we learn that Arturius has been not so low-key stalking his former friend, has found out his current general location, and is off to confront him. Rihanna's also been searching for her brother-in-law, and thankfully Silax was able to give her Fitchner's location just before jumping to his death to avoid being captured by Arturius's forces. And just as Silax was figuratively backed into a corner in Chapter 5, Future Monsters, Arturius is aiming to back Fitchner into one as well. which he doesn't yet know because he's too busy learning about the shipyard that turns out to not be just a shipyard. They're also growing crew members for these ships so that they can actually travel beyond the solar system. But that's all the info he's getting for now, because Arturius has landed and Fitchner goes to meet him. As they fight, Arturius's forces plant bombs to destroy the shipyard, and soon Arturius has Fitchner on the ground and is telling him goodbye. The burning asteroid in Chapter 6 proves a dangerous location for their fight, though, giving Fitchner the upper hand for a moment and ensuring that their fight continues. As they struggle, Rihanna arrives to rescue Fitchner. She's angry with him over the deaths of their team members, but thankfully Fitchner seems to have learned a lesson from the situation with Hecuba and her daughter, and from his own feud with Arturius. That being, Severo deserves a better world, and that perhaps Quicksilver, of all people, can help him provide it. And so he enters into a new arrangement with Quick, the business of a revolution.
Woohoo.
Yeah, the whole, like, when Quicksilver actually calls it the business of revolution, I'm just like, oh, Quicksilver. Never change, but also please change.
But change, though.
He's not going to at this point, mm-hmm. I'm sure. But I had to say at the beginning, I don't know why, but the little nanny montage made me giggle a little bit. I don't know how it was portrayed in the audio version, because it's only like a page of panels where he's interviewing these prospective nannies, and it's just kind of funny. You know, they're all colors and men, women, shapes and sizes, whatever. But it's, I don't know, it's kind of like every movie montage of trying to hire a nanny. I think there's one that actually says something about using physical force to get a kid to do what you mm-hmm. want him to do. Was this audiobook the same as volume one where... Mm-hmm. They had like different voices.
Yeah. So Fitchner, not necessarily monologues, but says something to the effect of like, he's interviewing all these different nannies. And then there's like their little back and forths, which sounds kind of like the interspersed panels that you're describing mm-hmm. with like him asking questions and different actors' voices representing the different nannies responding to the questions. So I think it was more or less portrayed the same way, just without the visuals.
Yeah, I wasn't sure if it was just like Fitchner telling the story of like, I interviewed a bunch of people to be Severo's caretaker and...
No, one of the great things about this being kind of like more of an audio play than just a sort of standard audio book, even compared to, for example, the other Red Rising books where you had different narrators for the different POVs. But with this, you really got different actors doing all the different voices. Even super minor characters had their own actor that did the voice for it.
This is like a total side note, but I know that they've got the graphic audiobook for Red Rising that's, I want to say the whole thing is out. I don't know if, I can't remember if they released it in portions or just released the whole thing, but I know that Red Rising for sure is out. And I've heard people saying it's really, really good in the same vein where there's a woman who is just Mustang's voice and it's got sound effects and stuff like that. So I'm not a big audiobook person only because, and I know I've said this a billion times before, I tend to zone out mm-hmm. when I'm listening to them, but I'm very interested in purchasing the graphic ones because I feel like that could keep my attention a little better. Because I've listened to some of the Star Wars audiobooks mm-hmm. for the new novels and they do it the same way. And I definitely, it was way easier for me to pay attention to those. So,
yeah. And if they're done, if the Red Rising one is done like these graphic novels is, it's fantastic. And the quality, especially considering, you know, like I wasn't sure what I was getting into because I was like, okay, it's an audio play, but it's for graphic novels. But they did a fantastic job with this. So I honestly want to go back and get the Red Rising one and listen to that because I think it would actually add a lot over really only having Darrow's POV, at least in the audiobook version, only having the one narrator doing that. I think having the different actors portraying the different characters would be really awesome.
Yeah, I'm definitely interested. I've heard that the Mustang actor especially is like really, really good, but I am also very interested in hearing Severo.
Yeah, absolutely.
Anyway, so they do this infiltration thing. I'm glossing over the fact that Fitchner basically goes and gets in with the mob so mm-hmm. that he can get access to his enemies, frenemies. He was a friend. Then he was kind of a frenemy, and now he's just a straight up enemy after the burn thing. But I'm glossing over Fitchner's deal with the mob here a little bit. But when they do the infiltration thing at Arturius's house and they use those little gnats,
Yeah, that, those like, were so cool.
I want some of those for myself. I want a whole cadre of them just so I can be like, who do I want you to listen to now? Which maybe makes me seem evil, but not like my family members or something, but just kind of like, oh God, to be a literal fly on the wall.
So many times that I'm like, oh, I wish I could just hear that.
Especially when it's things that you hear about after the fact, a conversation or whatever, and you just, you know, somebody in that room was either, whether it's a happy thing or not a happy thing, like you wanted to know what their actual reaction was. And that's what these gnats, they're using them for James Bond level infiltration purposes here, but I just want them to be a spy of the lower kind.
Oh, absolutely. And I love gossip. So I just want to like hear all the things and know like, ooh, that's what they said. Oh my God.
Oh God. Speaking of the infiltration into Artorias's house during this party. I know that Fichtner has said that he did bad things. He says it in the original trilogy before he dies. I mean, we've seen him do some kind of shitty things already in these graphic novels. And as a gold, it's also kind of par for the course that they've done some terrible things. But almost killing his former friend turned enemy's baby as revenge? Ugh.
So fucked up. It's not even eye for an eye. Not that it would be okay if he was like, I'm going to hunt down and kill his wife because he killed my wife. But instead, focusing on the baby is just like, what the fuck, Fichtner?
Yeah. And also just the fact that Artorias isn't the only person who's going to be harmed here. I don't mean just like if the baby were to die, what about the wife? Yes, she's a gold. I'm sure she's also done terrible things, but Fichtner doesn't ever say anything about her. And we also don't know how much she even knows about their little feud. So you're going to kill a woman's child just because you're mad at her husband? Ugh. I'm glad Rihanna stopped him. I'm also glad that Rihanna clearly didn't know that's what Fichtner meant to do. And I don't think any of the other people who were with him did either. But even though she stops him, this whole thing turns out to just be a waste of their time. And also, again, Fichtner got in bed with the mob to get in there to do this thing. And then he didn't even do it, which good. But he gets another one of his crew killed, a Gray, I believe. And yeah.
Phoenix,
also... Yeah, and also we have to listen to the whole lamb scythe bit again, which I'm tired of it. Like I was tired of it in the first one, and I was kind of hoping it wouldn't play a big part in this one. And I guess it doesn't really, but I was just like, stop giving reasons for this to come up again, please. The interesting thing is that Quicksilver had kind of told Fichtner earlier that he couldn't back him because he was drawing too much attention to himself and stuff. Understandable. But then after this whole situation, Quicksilver actually sends people to rescue Fichtner. And then when they meet up, Fichtner asks for his patronage. And Quicksilver's like, okay.
Cool.
It just, yeah.
Well, it's
just...
especially because like Fichtner does this whole thing about, oh, I know what it is that Quicksilver needs from me right now. Like I basically have to give over my life to him.
Yeah,
kind of deal, which is, I mean, it makes sense in a way, but like also to your point, it's weird that Quicksilver basically said, I'm writing you off. I can't be associated with you. And then he's like, except actually, I want you to basically pledge your life to me.
And of course, there's a lot of stuff that we're skipping over because I think it's kind of neither here nor there. But Fichtner's first job for Quicksilver is just like, oh, what? I understand why Quicksilver sent Fichtner out to the Rim to meet up with this Hecuba person who is causing Quicksilver problems because she doesn't want to give him leadership over this whole shipbuilding operation.
Yeah, it's like a shipyard building thing.
So I understand why Fichtner was sent out there, but I'd be curious to know whether Quicksilver had any idea about the whole weird mother-daughter dynamic. Part of me is like, Fichtner went out there with too little information, unless there was a backdoor conversation that we weren't privy to where Quicksilver explained the thing between the mother and daughter. But I don't think there was, because Fichtner seems pretty surprised that Hecuba is just like, yeah, kill my daughter for me, please. She's such a pixie. And also, what?
Yeah. I don't think there was any kind of like off-screen conversation. I feel like I could be misremembering this, but I feel like he gets a dossier of information on the flight out there. But yeah, the whole thing is very weird.
Yeah, I feel like Quicksilver had to have known about the issues between Hecuba and Prospera. And I guess like I'm comparing it to, so even Nero Augustus, who is, he literally put his kid out on the rocks to die, and then the kid didn't die. And then he doesn't love the Jackal very clearly, and he really doesn't want anything to do with him. But then the Jackal gets into the Institute, and he tries to bribe the Jackal into winning the Institute. And then he doesn't. And of course, you know, the Jackal and his father kind of step away from each other a little bit between Red Rising and Golden Sun. And then for the beginning of Golden Sun, they clearly haven't been in contact with each other a bunch or anything like that. But Nero's still not out hiring hits on his son. And it doesn't even seem, Hecuba's problems with her daughter, maybe it's just because it's a graphic novel and they don't go into the story much, but it's basically just like, ugh, my daughter's a pixie and I don't like her. Get rid of her for me. I don't know. Even for Gold, that seems...
Well, I do think there's some discussion between Fichtner and her about Hecuba thinks that Prospera is planning to kill her. And that's part of the reason why she's taking action against Prospera. I'm not sure that there's any evidence of it or anything like that, but that there's some kind of belief that Hecuba believes that Prospera is planning to kill her and take over her role.
You're probably right. I have very vague memories about it. And I just do remember Hecuba also referring to her daughter as being a pixie or whatever.
Like, oh, yeah, for sure.
She's that's not. Part of it, yeah, she's not living up to, I don't know, your third tier Gold family name or something. But yeah, so then it just turns into a double murder by each other. I don't even know what to
do. Which also seems, I'm also not clear on what Pierce was trying to accomplish with that. The whole like double agent kind of thing with Fichtner and Prospera, but then it just resulting in both of the women dying. It's just like, why did all of that happen?
Well, the both of them dying for sure wasn't the plan. I think the plan was that Prospera was going to agree to what Quicksilver wanted. And that's why Fichtner was like, well, your mom said, if I do this thing, you know, if I off you, then she might give me what I want. But she's been difficult for how long? And you're telling me if your mom is dead and you take over things, you will give it to me. So it was really just complete chance that when Prospera jumped out of the coffin casket, whatever, floating coffin, and shot her mother, that Hecuba happened to be able to get her razor around her daughter's neck like just in time so that they both died.
Oh yeah, my question is for Pierce of like, why did he write that? why is that there? It seems a little like overly complicated in terms of how to resolve a plot point.
I mean, I guess to give us that scene with Fichtner and the security person who was questioning him and to show us that Fichtner can use his anger to pass their little like lie detector tests. I still don't think it was the best way to do it. And also, I suppose to just, it's sort of a, it goes to show you thing, like, don't have a vendetta against your daughter. And as a daughter, don't have a vendetta against your mom. And I don't know.
Golds be golden.
Yeah. Yeah. For real. Then after that, Fichtner goes out to the shipbuilding operation, the asteroid. And it's not just them building ships, which, as we know from the earlier revelations and his conversations with, I keep wanting to call him Zanzibar, and I know that's not his name. Zerubbabel. From now on, he's Zanzibar.
Zanzibar.
I doubt he'll come up too much anyway. So we know from his conversations with fucking Zanzibar, the magician over here, that Quicksilver is looking into gene splicing and creating people, if you want to call them that, that can survive long-term space travel and all that. But then we get out there and Fichtner sees the people that they are growing in, I don't know, vats isn't the right word, but you know what I mean. The people that they're growing in these floaty vat things. And he's like, they're monsters. And it's like, but like 700 years ago, you all were the monsters. Okay. There were still Homo sapiens on Earth. And the colors had just become a thing a little over 700 years ago. Like, How do you think they felt about you, us puny Homo sapiens on Earth?
Yeah, and meanwhile, these like godlike creatures are being created and literally ascending from the heavens. Might be a little monstrous.
I guess.
Yeah, I guess descending, yeah.
That was just very holy, weird, carved human-like beings, Batman. Because even though he heard about it, and we heard about it from Zanzibar, Zerubbabel's, whatever the fuck his name is, I wasn't at least expecting to see them actually growing these humanish things in vats.
Yeah.
Yet. And I know the whole place gets blown up, but like this has to have something to do with the Askamani, right?
It seems like it, that like, there's something going on there. Maybe that like as a result of this, Quicksilver starts new experiments that end up being the Askamani or something like that.
Or even that there had already been a finished product. I hate to call it that because they're actual living people, creatures, whatever. But if there had already been a finished product and they weren't all destroyed, I could be wrong, but I think it's a logical theory to think that the Askamani might have, if not entirely come from this whole situation, then certainly it certainly had something to do with their existence, because a lot of it, like the color of their skin and the fact that they are made to survive in deep space and they can like even spend short times out in space safely is anyway, the whole place gets blown up while Fichtner is fighting his frenemy. Turned enemy. I don't even like, they're not frenemies anymore. I get that. But
yeah.
I love how they're just dueling and everything is exploding around them and they just keep dueling.
Yeah, they just keep going because of course they do.
Because they're golds and that's what they do. I love that it's Rihanna who comes in to save the day. That it's not just Fichtner getting the better of Arturius, who is bigger, stronger, and presumably even a better fighter than Fichtner is, because he does seem to be a better fighter than Fitch in this fight. But Rihanna the Little Red comes in, and granted, she's got a ship and a gun, but she's the one who saves the day, and I liked that.
Yes, that was a great touch.
Not that I'm talking shit about her, but I meant to say earlier when we were talking about the nanny montage that later I felt really bad for the poor nanny that he actually chooses because she like has to deal with the thugs who come looking for Fichtner and how confusing things are with Rihanna coming around and like how she talks to Fichtner, because this is obviously way pre-rising and this, I think she's a brown, this brown woman is just like, why is this red girl coming around here and talking to the, you know, Dominus like a friend or a relative? And then Rihanna just shows up and takes Sevro?
Yeah.
That poor nanny, that poor woman is going to end up with some sort of weird trauma or complex from this whole situation.
Oh, 100%.
And I don't know if they ever even name her. I couldn't find her name. Because I went back and like was flipping through to make some notes for this episode and I couldn't find a name for her. So I don't know that they ever even name her, but we're going to call her Branny.
Oh, Branny, because she's a brown nanny.
Yeah, exactly. So we're going to call her Branny. And I'm just going to say that I feel bad for Branny. And I know that there is no such, well, even if there is such a thing as therapy in this world, it's certainly not going to be available to a low color. And I feel for her. My heart goes out to her. I don't really know what her place in the story is going forward. She does show up in volume 3. I'll say that, but I don't know. I feel bad for Branny.
Poor Branny.
Kudos to her for putting up with all this shit, because she's very stoic about it. Like, she's clearly upset and everything, but she's still very stoic about it. Like, way more stoic than she really should or could be. But I guess that's the color stuff drilled into them. At least Fichtner is back with Sevro and Rihanna got to save the day. And it all comes down to this final meeting with Fichtner and Quicksilver, where the full deal between them is laid bare. And we knew quite a bit about the creation of the Sons of Ares from the original trilogy, of course, between what Fichtner told people and what Quicksilver eventually tells Darrow and Sevro in Morningstar when they quote unquote kidnap him from Phobos. So we know quite a bit, but it's still, I really liked seeing that conversation and the decisions surrounding them founding the Sons. actually played out, because it wasn't just, I do this and you do this. It was, we're going to do this. And okay, who's going to do this? And how is this going to work? And Rihanna will be the contact with the low colors, and Fitchner will be the man behind the mask, and Quicksilver will pretend like he has nothing to do with it and will only ever talk to, I think there's like a bit where Fitchner's like, you'll be the contact with the high colors, but I don't really know how many high colors are actually involved in this other than Fitchner. So I think it's really just Quicksilver and Fitchner, and then Fitchner to Rihanna, and then Rihanna is going to branch out from there. But it was neat seeing that. And it was neat knowing that Rihanna is going to get to continue playing a role despite, you know, absconding with Sevro for a bit.
Yes.
Well, in memoriam.
Phoenix, who sacrificed himself so Fitch, Rihanna, and the others could escape.
Hecuba and Prospera. Not sure there's anything to miss there, but they did, after all, die?
Sylax, who also sacrificed himself in a way to help Rihanna find Fitchner, and then made sure he couldn't be taken and his knowledge used against his friends.
Poor Sylax. He actually was a holdover from Volume 1, so It was a little bit sad to see him.
And he was actually like a decent guy too.
Yeah. It's been hard to get attached to characters in the graphic novel, because it's like, we know the ones that are still around after this. And Fitchner's kind of an asshole, like even more so than we know from the book. So I don't feel so much for him. Maybe not even as much as I should, but. All right. As we close out the episode, we just want to give a shout out to our Heroes Tier patron, Tommy of the TKOK Podcast Network. Thank you so much for supporting us. Once again, I'm Tara, along with fellow host Nick. Don't forget, you can always hit us up at Sagas and Sass on Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter, or email us at sagasandsass@gmail.com with any comments or thoughts you might have. Keep an eye out for our next episode, which will cover Sons of Ares Volume 3. And please consider supporting us at patreon.com/geeksaga_entertainment for early access to our recordings.
Thank you for listening to the Sagas and Sass podcast. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter at Sagas and Sass.